Creating is hard as hell, but community can make all the difference. Join We Create Daily, our community of storytellers of all kinds who, like you, are looking to advance their craft, careers, and creativity. Join our membership community today at thecreatedaily.com. That's thecreatedaily.com. And make your creative journey a little easier alongside like-minded storytellers just like you. My first writer's room was on Queen Sugar. And I also was 38 years old. I turned 39 in that room. So I was not a spring chicken, you know, but I think that age helped me because I think sometimes you don't realize that, but like with many jobs, a lot of your job is politics and navigating personalities. So I had a lot of experience navigating personalities. Child, we did it.
Woop, woop.
We are here with a whole podcast. A whole podcast. Not half a podcast. A whole podcast.
That's right. I'm honey.
Welcome to the Creative Cut Up Podcast, a lively and honest space for storytellers that sits at the intersection of craft, business, and independence. I'm Felicia Pride, a writer, director, producer, head honey and honey child, and head storyteller of the Create Daily, a platform I founded in 2012 to help storytellers, especially those of us who are historically excluded, thrive creatively and professionally. And I'm here with my co-host because we got some cutting up to do.
We sure do. I'm Drea Donna Rowland, the creative executive at Honey Child and a writer and producer.
Yes, she is.
And I'm Georgette Pierre, a voice actor and producer. You can hear it, right?
Oh, we hear that voice, honey. Oh, we hear the voice. Oh, yeah. So join us weekly where we talk shop and smack and share the good, the bad, and the ugly. And from three different perspectives, which I love, providing tangible tips to support your creative practice, your career, and your artist self. Because we all know that being an artist is hard as hell.
Say that.
But the Creative Cut Up is here to help. Shall we begin, ladies?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So I'm so curious. I was watching a show the other day with my mother and I realized, I mean, I've always thought I was that person who can watch a show just as a fan, you know, just as I am just a watcher. But I realized all I do is analyze shows and movies when I watch them. I watched this show with her and I can't even get through it because I'm like, it's too slow. They should have started here. So am I the only one? Do y'all do that? What is your viewing experience like?
Absolutely. See, I'm coming from the production standpoint. I was like, oh, what drone did they use? Is that a drone or a helicopter camera? And I'm like, and it's literally
things I would never think about.
I am literally breaking down like the shots as if I was directing something. Cause I was just like, I wonder what camera they used to get this. Are they on the dolly shot?
Yeah. Inside? For me, I look at it like homework. So I'll watch the first episode of anything. Yeah. From a development standpoint, the pilot is usually what you have to go on. So I'll watch every pilot just to analyze it and see, you know, if I'm into the world and if I can see myself going on this journey with them. So definitely.
Child, and I be getting mad. And I'll look at specific networks. I'm like, oh, so they didn't give this creator that note, but they trying to give me the note because I got a show in development with them. I have to kind of take a step back and like, just
but
watch.
You know what? It takes me back to like when I was first learning how to write, just like creative writing. And my teacher told me, she was like, from now on, you're going to read like a writer. And it's so true. Like, even if I'm just reading a book, I'm looking at, oh, what a beautiful sentence and a turn of phrase. And I love that metaphor. So I kind of everything I consume, I'm kind of looking at it with that analytical hat now.
Yeah. Well, I love that perspective. I watch things as a writer, I guess. But sometimes it takes the fun out of it. I'm like, I just want to enjoy it, but this is a drag, you know.
But that's how you know it's really good, though. If it takes you out of that mode, when you're into it, you're like, that's how you know it's good.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, I mean, the other thing, though, that I do have to say sometimes to folks is like, you don't realize how much work goes into producing specifically television, right? So that's a great segue into our conversation today where we're talking about inside the writer's room and just talking about the what it looks like, what the process is, and how is television written. So I'm super excited about this conversation because the writer's room, when it's healthy, now there's some toxic as writer's room. We ain't going to talk about those today, but when the writer's room is healthy, it is my favorite place. So I'm super excited to dive in.
I am curious on your experience getting into your first writer's room and the expectations you had or didn't have, and then what it really was when you got into your first writer's room.
Yeah, my first writer's room was on Queen Sugar, and I also was 38 years old. I turned 39 in that room. So I was not a spring chicken, you know, but I think that age helped me because I think sometimes you don't realize that, but like with many jobs, a lot of your job is politics and navigating personalities. So I had a lot of experience navigating personalities. Luckily, you know, my first season on Queen Sugar was so amazing. It was run by Anthony Sparks, who I still consider a friend and mentor to this day. And he really raised the bar in terms of now my expectations of a showrunner, right? Which is someone who can be kind, fair, but also expect excellence and also be a good writer and expect you to write. So that experience was fantastic. And getting into that room, I didn't really know what to expect. I remember having some conversations with other writers, like, what is a writer's room like? And that sort of thing. But I don't think you really know it until you get into it. So I remember to get into it was kind of the traditional way where my reps at the time submitted me for the show. And it's interesting because I started out as a half hour writer when I went through NBC's Writers on the Verge program. When I came out of that program, Karen Horn, who used to run that program, said, you should write an hour long because there's just more drama jobs. Write a light drama. And I was like, okay, because I wasn't a joke writer, you know? So I was like, okay. So I wrote this pilot. It took me like 2 weeks to write it. And that was what was submitted and got me a meeting on Queen Sugar. Now, I had known Ava for a really long time, but I didn't pull that card just yet because I know Ava wants you to, like, you got to work for stuff, right? So I went through the process of meeting with Anthony, and I remember very clearly setting my intention to be, I want to genuinely connect with the showrunner and talk about how excited I am about this show because I love Queen Sugar. And that's what I went in to do. And that also, that sort of intention setting has served me well for a long time where it's like, I can't control anything else but like how I show up. Mm-hmm. And he and I had an amazing creative conversation, and that led to him submitting me to talk to Ava. And I talked to Ava and she was like, I'm so proud of your progress. And then I got staffed.
Wow. That raises a couple of follow-up questions for me. One is, you mentioned that you started out writing half hour and it was recommended that you write an hour long. What are your feelings on dramedy? Because everybody says comedy is 30 minutes, drama is an hour, but then you have a show like The Bear, but they still call it a comedy. So if you feel like things have changed since you got that advice, or?
I don't think that half hour should have to be funny. An hour long should have to be not funny. I think they should just call it what I call it, half hours and hour longs. And that should be the categories, you know, and base it on that versus, you know, necessarily funny and not funny. Because I would love to write like a half hour that is The Bear. You know what I mean? Like, that is not considered traditional comedy. Mm-hmm. But I think definitely it was very much more, the lines were drawn more tightly in the sand back in the day. And now that new shows have opened up, you find people who can write both half hours and hour longs. And I think it's great that things have opened up in that way.
It sounds like your first room was a great experience.
How did you learn your way around your first writer's room?
So I was talking a little bit about the managing of the personalities and whatnot. And so I always, in every writer's room I go to, I take some time to just listen. I take time to listen and to observe. I think being in TV writers' rooms, a skill that can be important is human behavior and understanding human behavior and just watching people and learning their anxieties, learning their triggers, learning their tics, and making sure that you kind of don't fall into any minefields, essentially. So for Queen Sugar, I definitely, took some time to listen, but apparently that much, because my work wife, she wasn't my work wife, and then we had just met. And I remember the first week, she was like, you talked a lot this week, but not in a bad way. Because one of the things they say as a staff writer, you shouldn't talk that much. And I was 39, yeah. You know, I was an old bitch. But what I do continue to do is I only talk when I have something worthy to say. I do find in rooms, people just talk sometimes just to talk. I am one of those where I may be processing and thinking, and then I'll say something because I want everything as much as possible, what I say, to hold some weight, right? Because if you keep talking, after a while, you're just like, okay. So I did start speaking because I also was the age of our like main characters, right? So I felt like I had experiences that could speak to that. And when I had something to say around it, I said it. I wasn't nervous. And I think also just having a self-assuredness, being older, helped as well. And I had done so much self-work that I was showing up as my authentic self. And I always say that that job was the first job where I could show up as like 38, Baltimore, Jersey, like all these things mixed up into one, and it was respected and valued. And that gave me a lot of agency and encouragement.
That sounds like a great environment for your first room. I think one thing people don't know is sometimes you get paired with other writers to write together, or is that like most episodes? So like, how does that work? You're just learning each other and learning each other's styles, and then you have to go and write together. What was that like when you first had to do that?
Oh, girl, no, you just thrown together. So basically, I'll also kind of explain to you the hierarchy and how that works. So in a writer's room, the hierarchy is staff writer, story editor, executive story editor, co-producer, producer, supervising producer, co-EP, co-executive producer, and then executive producer. And different rooms have different hierarchies, right? In terms of the weight or the distribution, I should say. So some rooms are really top heavy, a lot of co-EPs, a lot of EPs, and it may be a couple of what they call lower levels. Some rooms have a lot of lower levels and a couple of EPs. So our room was kind of evenly distributed for Queen Sugar, but that kind of also impacts the dynamics in a room and the hierarchies in a room and whatnot. And often what will happen is there's two ways that they usually pair people to co-write episodes. And there are many reasons why you may co-write an episode. One is you don't have the chops to write your own episode. That's one reason. Two is depending on, because what happens is when you are writing episodes, you're out of the room for a period of time. So one thing that showrunner has to do is be thinking about how many writers are out of the room at the same time and who is out of the room at the same time and sort of balancing that. So they may put writers together to balance who's out of the room and who's not out of the room. They may put together a higher level and a lower level writer in order to help with the training process. So there's many different configurations. They may put writers at the same level, or they may put writers who are fast together. So in my co-writing experience, all my co-writing experiences have been great so far. I've co-written three or four scripts, I want to say. They just throw you together. Like, you don't know how they write. You have to figure out how you go make this work. And I have found like taking storylines has been the easiest way to distribute the work. So it's like, you do this storyline, I do this storyline. But the way that the room actually works in terms of how we even get to that point is we usually start the beginning of the season with like broad thinking, you know, some blue skying. What do we want to see? What do we owe? What themes do we want to explore? What plot lines would we love to see our characters in? And then we start to think more specifically about this season, what we want to say this season, what we're going to be our main through line for this season. And then we start to think character by character, what are major plot points we want them to be involved in, right? And then we start to look at, can we put those major plot points across episodes in a season, like major tent poles, essentially. And then once we kind of get that, usually there's some sort of document that might happen, or the showrunner has to pitch the season to the studio and network that gives them an idea, this is where we're going. But of course, things change. Shit changes every day. Then from there, as a room, we break each episode, right? So breaking means we actually look at what's going to happen in every scene of the episode, and we break it into acts. Those most shows I worked in work in acts, and we break down every scene. So everybody knows for the most part what a scene should be. Then the writer or the writers go off and develop an outline. Typically some rooms have different steps, a beat sheet, then an outline, but most rooms I've been in has just outline. And then, and I should say, when we're breaking down what should happen in the episode, we do it by storyline first. And then we do what we call either the weave. Some rooms call it the weave, or some rooms call it the blend, where we actually then blend all the storylines together into an episode. But we look at it from storyline each to see the emotional journeys and that it tracks. You go off to outline, and that's when you have to decide if you're co-writing, who's going to do what storylines and how you bring it together. And that's all on you to figure out. And then you get feedback on the outline. The outline may go to the studio and network, and you get feedback from them. And then you write your script, and then you get feedback from your room, then the studio and network. And then you have a table read, then actors chime in, then your directors chime in. It's a lot of feedback after that. So that's the traditional process.
Oh, wow. That is a lot. So what's the length of time that that naturally takes before the episode is actually locked?
So that's also what's interesting too, is that, you know, my first experience on Queen Sugar, we did 13 episodes, and we would have like 10 episodes in a can before we went into production, right? Mm. Grey's Anatomy is one of the last bastions of shows that you write, produce, and airs at the same time. So we would have maybe one episode in the can before we started airing. So that's a different type of pressure. You got to deliver them scripts by X, or, you know, millions and millions of Americans are going to be mad because you don't have an episode airing. So that's a different type of pressure. So it depends on the show. But you usually have maybe 3 weeks to a month before prep. And then in prep, you're still changing the script, your hope, mm-hmm. and you're still changing the script during production too. Mm. You just hope you're not making major changes, but the script is still changing in production. Then you have to get to the practicalities of it. So once production, it gets to production, and it's like, you got too many locations, or we... You have, you know, you're only at this one location once. Can you put this someplace else? As you start to think about, as you move up the ranks, you start to think like a producer and be like, I'm only at that location once. As you're writing it, let me put it someplace else in advance.
So it sounds like being in a writer's room is just like one big group project, and writing usually is like a solitary thing. So I wonder if writers are prepared for that transition when you get into the writer's room and all the feedback and all the working together that you have to do. Was that a transition for you? Or like,
it's interesting because, you know, I don't like a lot of folks. Most people who know me know that. And I hated group projects growing up. I hated group projects. It was so many group projects, honey. And it was just like, just dead weight, you know? The writer's room is a little different. It binds you together in a way that a lot of experiences don't, particularly if you're like up against challenging things, whether it's like studio network notes that don't make sense or production challenges. And you are able to bond with people pretty quickly because of that, which could be a wonderful thing if the people are great. If you are in a room where the people are not great, I could see how, and I've had some rooms where I had, you know, a few bad apples, as I'd like to say, but if you're in a room where there's many bad apples, I can't imagine what that feels like, because you spend a lot of time with these folks. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, though, this is the best fucking job. Like, we sit around, we're talking about pop culture as it relates to our show. And like, then we're like sitting here trying to figure out story problems. I love it. I love it when it's right. I think the challenge, though, too, is we were talking about the group project. You know, it's a lot of, you have to start to get really good at taking notes, taking them graciously, and become a problem solver, right? I think that's a skill that I always tell writers who are interested in being writers rooms, really hone your problem solving skills. How do you solve a story problem quickly, both from a production standpoint and also just an emotional standpoint, a stakes standpoint, a structural standpoint? Like, being able to solve problems is a superpower.
I'm assuming this is also something that happened and got honed over time, right? Like, it wasn't something that you were navigating off the gate, because, you know, you hear about different writers getting different jobs or consistently working. And then you hear about people that were like in a couple of rooms and then that was it for them. And so when you're talking about being a quick problem solver and listening, were those things that were just naturally that came to you, or was a combination of you getting the experiences on the different types of shows that you got experiences on?
I think it's a few things. I do a lot of work outside of work. So mm-hmm. I think that also helps. I write features and I'm in writers groups and I'm taking classes, and that all helps to continue to strengthen your muscles. I have conversations about you know, I'm working on several projects when I'm outside of a room,
right,
that, and having conversations with other writers outside of my writer's room and other professionals, that that helps to continue to strengthen that muscle and keep it strong. I will say, though, the only place that you can learn long form storytelling is in the writer's room. The only place you can learn how to track story from episode 107 to episode 307 is in a writer's room. Because the only thing we do outside of writer's rooms typically is write pilots, right? We're not writing episode 6. So that's the one thing I will say, is that I was able to learn that skill of tracking story only through the writer's room. But I think within the writer's room, you gotta be learning. I think that some people don't take advantage of the fact that this is free school when you're in the writer's room and really like learn. You have amazing, especially when you're like a staff writer and you have like people who have been on iconic shows, listen to them. You know what I mean? Look at their work. Now, I will say, just because somebody been in the business a long time don't mean they're a great writer or great in the room. Some people just continue to fail up. But there are a lot of people who, you're like, it's a masterclass, and you need to be a sponge.
That makes me question, how do you get your next opportunity? Some people get one and done. Some people, you know, can't seem to get in the room again. So I'm just curious about how do you make your way around and stay, you know, working?
Yeah, it's really challenging. I think some of it's luck. You know what I mean? There are a lot of fantastic writers who are out of work right now. And, but I do think that for those who are out of work for a reason, I think some of the reasons is because they don't know how to navigate the room in terms of like, they're annoying in the room, or they're not a team player in the room. Or to me, I don't think people understand what their job is in the writer's room. Your job is to be of service to your showrunner. Right. So you even see sometimes in rooms, people will be pushing back on the showrunner. Now, my rule is I will say something once. But I don't agree with it. I don't think it's a good idea. I'll bring it up. I'll say it once, and I say it in a way that is respectful, right? If my name is on it, I may say it 3 times and I may really push back, because if my name's on it, then that's different. Like if this is my episode, right. But I'll say it once. And then if the showrunner is like, no, this is direction, my job is to make their direction work, period. And I don't think some writers understand that. Like they think, I'm like, no, the job is for us to make it work. That's what our showrunner wants to do. We need to make it work. So I think that helps. I think too is networking, is who you know. How I got my job on Grey's Anatomy was through someone that I knew, right? And then even my new job, you having people rally for you who know you, who know the showrunner. So a lot of it is networking and the writers that you know and building your relationship with other writers, because essentially that's who's hiring people, right? Writers. Mm-hmm. Writers are hiring writers. I mean, and of course, development execs and producers. So getting in front of them and being memorable so they remember you when staffing time comes around. It's like all these different factors that contribute to that.
Mm-hmm. Are there, I guess, your top 3 to 5 takeaways for people literally looking to get into a writer's room for the first time, or looking to just move on up if they are in the writer's room, like as a script coordinator or something lower level?
Ever wonder how a novel went from the page to the screen? How an entire film derived from a great magazine article? Or how you get the life rights to tell the story of that fascinating person you met or historical figure you're obsessed with? Learn the process in our new on-demand course called Based On, How to Adapt Books, Articles, and Real-Life Stories for Film and TV. Led by myself, Felicia Pride, Andrea Rowland, Honeychild's creative executive and co-host of the Creative Cut Up podcast, you'll learn the process of optioning and developing IP for adaptation, the nuances of 3 different types of adaptations, books, articles, life rights, all the development jargon, what Honeychild looks for and how we source, search, and track IP, plus the answers to all of your burning questions. We'll break down the ins and outs of adapting IP and more. You'll get immediate access to our on-demand course for 6 months upon registration. So sign up today at thecreatedaily.com. I think it's really kind of fucked up that a lot of support staff, there's not really a way, a more structured path for support staff to be promoted. So there are people who are in support staff roles for way too long before getting in the room. But in terms of, you know, folks who make sure your samples are prime time ready. I don't think a lot of people have this, their samples ready. So that's one thing is like have them prime time ready. Also, you gotta want to do this. I think that the writer's room is glorified. And again, is my favorite place. And people who aren't writers, you gotta be a writer to your core to really make this work because it is a lot. And I think that you really have to ask yourself, like, am I a writer in that way? And do I really want to be in a writer's room because I want to write these stories, or I just want to be in a writer's room because it sounds cool? Mm. You know, so being clear about that and really working on your people skills and how you manage people and personalities and how you interact with people is a big thing in the writer's room. And then I would also say working on your pitching skills. Mm. Pitching is really important. So, you know, there's a couple types of pitching that's happening in the room. One is quick pitches, right? What if they do this and then this happens? Quick, in and out. I find that sometimes writers, particularly newer writers, don't know how to get in and out. They talk it too long. So it's like, get in and out. And then there's pitching down your episode, which is where you are going to, your showrunner may not, is going to listen to you pitch the whole episode, and getting good at that and selling your episode. Cause sometimes you might have a good idea, and we'll joke about this in the room. I'm like, well, you didn't sell it good enough. Like, it's a good idea, but you ain't sell it. So you have to sell it in that way, right? The way that you position it. And also really learning your showrunner's quirks, what they like, what they don't like, and what words might make them pull back. So there's certain ways that you phrase stuff that might make a showrunner be like, no, 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 no. So you have to understand those things. So, and also understand what additional context or details they may need to know to understand what you're saying. So it's a lot of listening and getting to know their everything, their voice, their style, their aesthetic, their likes, their dislikes, their quirks, and pitching in that way. So getting good at pitching in different ways.
Those are all helpful.
I felt like that was a good question.
And the one thing I would also say is that I think that you want to be able to know what your superpower is in the room. And sometimes this is a question that showrunners ask on interviews. And before I go on a showrunner interview, I always watch as many episodes as I possibly can. When I went on Grey's Anatomy, there was no way I was going to be able to watch 17 episodes of television. So I was very honest. I was like, I watched the last seasons of our showrunner. So I watched like the last 7 seasons, and I had already watched the first 7 seasons, but then I was all in the wiki, which was great. All in the wiki. I remember on my wall, I posted all the characters and the characters' relationships and their inner dynamics and really focused on that. But I do that type of prep, right? Then I also come with pitches in my back pocket just in case they ask for ideas for the next season. And I also come with questions for the showrunner about what they expect, what all that good stuff. One question they may ask you is about your superpower. And I'm pretty clear that I'm a problem solver, and I'm quick on my feet with pitches. So those are like my two superpowers in the room. Now, I remember one showrunner said, you know, there's 3 things that a writer must do, right? They must be great on the page, must be great in the room, and must be great on set. And that most writers are only good at 2 of the 3. So that's also something to be thinking about. It's like some people may not be great in a room, but they are amazing on the page. And that's why they keep getting hired or they're keep being in rooms. Some people can do both. I think you should try to be able to be great on the page and great in the room. And then some people are just amazing on set. So they spend a lot of their time producing episodes because they have those relationships on set, or they just know how to diffuse situations. So there's also those additional superpowers as well. Again, I feel like we could always talk more about the writer's room, and I'm sure we'll have additional episodes where we go even nitty gritty into aspects of the writer's room.
Yeah, because people will probably have a lot of questions.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. So this takes us to the segment we call How We Create, where we share all forms of inspiration that may have stopped us in our tracks, made us laugh, had us shouting, or even reminded us to be great. What are y'all vibing with these days?
Honestly, for me, I've been really inspired lately by my mom.
Oh.
So she just retired from her job after like 30 years. And she like realized that her pension is just way less than her salary, is not sustainable. And so instead of like being like, woe is me, she's like, no, I'm going to figure out my second act. She's like getting new skills. She launched a tax business. She's out here marketing herself.
I love that. Like,
I do.
Yes, she is starting over at 60. And so for me, and for, I feel like that's just a lesson for all of us who are in creative fields. Like a lot of creatives, our parents don't understand why we don't go get a 9-to-5, why we don't get a regular job. But guess what? She did that. She did the right things and it wasn't really no return on that investment. So she's starting over. And so it's really inspiring for me that you can start over at any time. You can redirect at any time and just take charge of the ship.
I love that. And that actually is such a great segue into mine. I was yesterday years old when I learned that Tanya Blunt is now Tanya Trotter of War and Treaty. And I don't know if you remember Tanya Blunt, but she's from, I want to say she's from Maryland, and she had this through the rain, through the rain. Anyway, honey is 50 and was nominated for Best New Artist at the Grammys at 50 years old. Now, wow. Best New Artist, she's been an artist forever. You know what I mean? Wow. But like completely reinvented herself. You know, her and her husband are in this group creating this blend of music that is their own. And I'm just super, super inspired by that. For sure, as an artist and that. Like just keep going. And I was just very inspired from that.
Oh, I love that too. Well, I'm gonna keep it on the music train this time around. I feel like there's a small subgroup of us that are still Ryan Leslie fans. And so by the time this episode comes out, he had already dropped a new album called You Know My Speed. I was like, if you are our Les fan, you already know his signature. And so, yeah, so I've been listening to Ryan Leslie's new John, You Know My Speed.
I love that. I was always inspired by Ryan's Superphone. Was that what it's called?
Yeah. He's still doing that.
Uh-huh. Like, you know, one of the first to be like, how do I go direct to consumer with text messaging? And just so smart, so brilliant. Brilliant with that. So yeah, shout out.
So you got to keep your streams of income in multiple industries.
That is a word, and that is a word to end on, okay? You need to have your multiple streams of income. Thank y'all for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Cut Up Podcast, a lively and honest space for storytellers that sits at the intersection of craft, business, and independence. Listen to us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you dig it, subscribe, rate, review, and please tell a friend. If you need help getting back into your creative practice, check out the Creative Comeback Workbook and Journal. You can also join our newsletter and our We Create Daily community, both of which provide even more resources and opportunities to thrive creatively at thecreatedaily.com. And lastly, follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn at The Create Daily. Acting on your ideas is a form of self-love. And when I decided to write the Creative Comeback Workbook and Journal, it was with you in mind. Storytellers with stories inside of you that you need to get out into the world. But life, fear, uncertainty has a way of leaving us stuck. But no more. It's time to reclaim our creative practice and get unstuck. The Creative Comeback Workbook and Journal can help you get back on creative track. 30 days of dynamic prompts, exercises to stimulate creativity, alongside motivational quotes, journal pages, and more. If you're ready to create again, get your copy of the Creative Comeback Workbook and Journal today at creativecomeback.com. That's creativecomeback.com. Because it's never too late to become the artist you always wanted to be.